Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name is Mike Calvin. I'm joined by John Cross of the Daily Mirror and by David Priest, goalkeeping coach, scout and columnist. This is the time of year for perspective and quiet reflection. But since it's football we're talking about, that's not always possible. 2019 was a turbulent year for Manchester United. Now, be honest, John, did you expect Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to still be in a job?
12 months ago, absolutely not. It was very clear, I think, from that point of appointment that he would be a temporary fix. He would gather everyone together. They'd hopefully get a new manager bounce and he'd see them through a very, very turbulent, difficult time. And they'd make a long-term appointment in the summer. Well, I think everyone, you know, I'm sure probably ourselves, you know, were guilty of being swept along by the wave. It felt absolutely inevitable and impossible to do anything but appoint Solskjaer after United got through against PSG. And they had this wonderful run of away results. And actually, as soon as that happened, as soon as he was appointed, the wheels came off, really. The players who had been giving him everything, I thought, relaxed. I just felt that once United have done that, I think they need to move away from this chop and change mentality. I think they need to give him time and opportunity. And I don't understand where the same people who were saying he probably needs three windows have suddenly disappeared and changed again and said, oh, well, his time's up, he's gone. Well, actually, if you judge him on the big window, if you judge United on the big window, which was last summer, you can't argue that actually they improved that squad and it's going to take time. You can't do it overnight. Wan-Bissaka, I think, is an excellent defensive fullback. He can probably improve on his attacking side of the game. Dan James, Harry Maguire, good signings. It's just going to take time. There's still, I think, some distance off the top four, but United have to decide whether you are going to panic and use the barometer as the top four, as the tipping point for a manager, or give a manager time and try and proceed, try and move forward. I think they will do the latter, and I think they should do the latter, but I just think there are going to be frustrations, you know, real bumps along the road, and I'm not sure whether really that Solskjaer can always survive that. I mean, it was really instructive at points this season when they've seen off big teams like Leicester and Spurs beating them when the pressure was really on. They seem to respond, but away from home, they're really poor away from home, I think, on big occasions. And I think that tells you something about a weak mentality.
Yeah, well, because when you look at it, they lost at Watford just before Christmas. And that was a poor performance by any standards. What struck me about it was the lack of leadership. Now, when we talk, you know, we talk about Jordan Henderson at Liverpool provides that type of leadership. Who fills that void at Manchester United? McTominay seems to be growing into the role. And is that because Pogba's not been alongside him?
Yeah, possibly. You know, he's been given the time to flourish and just get games and get more experience, and he's taken that responsibility, like you said. But you've got to look at figures like David De Gea, Harry Maguire. They're the ones who've got to step up and be the leaders in that team.
What about De Gea as a goalkeeper? Do you think he's become increasingly fallible?
I think that you've got to take sort of two things in perspective. Is his whole game being affected, or is he just a good goalkeeper making mistakes? And I tend to go with the latter. I think Solskjaer is what he was talking after the Watford game, saying that he's looked brilliant in training. He's had some great games that have won them points over the last few weeks. Let's say the mistake that he made against Watford. It's something that happens to goalkeepers when you're thinking one step ahead of yourself. Instead of just focusing on catching the ball, you're already thinking about where you're going to distribute it to. All keepers of every level get caught out by that every now and again. But just the one that was more of a worry was the one against Everton, where he sort of meekly came there to punch the ball away and he was out-muscled for it, and it didn't look very convincing at all. So he signed, everyone thought that it was maybe to do his new contract, and he'll be coming out a contract before he signed his new deal. Maybe that was affecting him. Now he signed the new deal, he's the best paid goalkeeper in the world. That's no longer an excuse. So, yeah, probably need to keep an eye on that. But I think with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, I think the fact that he played better against bigger sides is because he's made them into a counter-attacking side. They've got pace on the side, they've got a lot of youth, and that's what they rely on. And they can do that against better sides. When you're playing against in the bottom half of the table and they're not going to come out at you and they're going to sit in, that's going to give you a problem that you've got to work out. And until now, he's not been able to do that.
Mm. There's still a lot of talk that Erling Haaland might join in January, you know, in preference to go to Dortmund. It's Mino Raiola's payday yet again. He's obviously closely associated with Paul Pogba. What is the solution to a Pogba problem? Do you think he should basically cash his chips in and leave?
I think the ultimate end result with Pogba is that he'll be sold next summer, because I think that Pogba is a wonderful player. I do sometimes question his motivation, and I think you could say that for a few players who now have reached the pinnacle of the game, which is winning the World Cup. And has he then basically lost a bit of an edge as a player? I still feel that the way United are structured and the way they're set up isn't ideal for Pogba in many ways, because I just think that they're missing cogs in midfield. If they had a sort of a better structure, you'd get more out of Pogba. And I think Pogba's position arguably is the eight, isn't it? That basically you'd have a more of a holding player if they're going to play in the way that they do, and then also a 10. And then I think you just need to build that dynamic, and therefore you need to almost build the midfield stroke team around Paul Pogba. And can United do that at this moment in time, when there's so much doubt over Pogba's state of mind, over his future, over where we go from here? You absolutely can't. And I just think we're reaching a point in time where I think United will have to look at it. They can't bear to leave it where he's running down his contract any longer. I don't think he'll be sold in January. I do think there's every chance he could go in the summer, because they just have to take a statement on it. He's such an amazing player. I think we forget how good Pogba is, that he's this incredible, rampaging, brilliantly entertaining midfield player who's won the World Cup and is no doubt about it, is world class and is a fabulous talent. And he's drifting at Man United. He's absolutely drifting into mediocrity, and that is a crime for Pogba and Man United.
Yeah. Do you expect, if Erling Haaland does sign, what sort of impact will he make in the Premier League?
I think for a club like Man United, who are used to having that focal point up front, the one striker who will literally do everything, they'll have it in him. He plays with a great maturity for somebody as young as he is, and he's not just a goal scorer by any means. And I think that there was a question asked about him, you know, whether he'd go to Manchester United or not, because of his father's history with Roy Keane and Manchester United. It's just an interesting point that when he started at Bryne, who were a local rival to Viking Stavanger, and Viking were a big club in Norway. They tried to sign Erling when he was 16, and his father wouldn't allow him to go because of the local rivalry, and he ended up going to Molde instead. So it might seem like a little bit of a joke that he wouldn't sign for Manchester United, but if his father's got that much influence, then I think that, you know, it might happen again.
Yeah. All 10 matches in the new year schedule are on BT Sport, shown live. The last of those 10 are on January 2nd. Sheffield United are playing Liverpool. Let's look at Sheffield United. Is Chris Wilder a viable candidate as manager of the year?
Yes, I do think he is a candidate. I personally wouldn't make him manager of the year, but I think if we look at candidates for manager of the year, if you're asking for four or five, he's definitely there. He's there with Guardiola, with Klopp, with Rodgers. And I just think the impact that he's had. I thought Sheffield United, I'll be perfectly honest, would struggle in the Premier League just because they decided not to spend big. They largely went with the squad and the ethos that they got promoted with. They've been an incredible breath of fresh air, not just in the way that they play, but if you go to Bramall Lane, the atmosphere is absolutely rocking. It's a throwback. It's brilliant to watch. They're great fun as a team to watch, the way that they're so different in their philosophy and the way that the team comes at you from all angles. They can be incredibly difficult, I think, to compete against. These improved players. The team knows exactly what they're doing in terms of the structure. They're fantastic to watch. He's taken pretty average, I have to say, sort of championship players and turned them into really good, you know, outstanding Premier League performers, I think. He's improved Premier League players. He's improved the squad right throughout at every level. And so, therefore, if you're judging on a manager on what he's achieved, where he's taken the team, where he's taken the squad and the players, then absolutely Chris Wilder must be appreciated as a contender manager here.
Mm. He doesn't sugarcoat things, does he?
No.
You know, and basically, I thought he came across as in a sort of true light when he was criticising Dean Henderson.
Yeah.
For a mistake. He said, yeah, he made a mistake. Needs to learn from it. When you've got a manager like that, in a position like a goalkeeper, which depends on confidence, what sort of balance does he have to strike?
Well, I think it says a lot about Dean Henderson that Wilder thought he could do that to his goalkeeper, because he wouldn't have done that so publicly if he didn't think that it would have a positive effect on him, because Dean's a very robust character. He's very driven, he's very ambitious, and I'm sure that his aim is to be Manchester United number one.
Do you think that's realistic?
Well, I mean, with De Gea signing a new contract, perhaps not, but I mean, if they decide to cash in or De Gea wants to leave, then he's perfectly capable of going in there and doing that job. He's got the right mentality, and like I said, it's testament to him that he was able to criticise him so publicly. But I think that's the biggest thing that Chris Wilder's done to his players. He's given them the mentality that they deserve to be there. So when he's upset that they've only got a point, say, away to Tottenham or whatever, he shows his frustration. And they're not just there to be... They're not just plucky underdogs. They're not just sort of... Yeah, it's a big club, Sheffield United, don't get me wrong, but in Premier League terms, he's not going there saying, oh, we're only little old Sheffield United. We'll give out our best shot. He's not thinking that at all. He's putting them on a level with every other Premier League side. And that's when the players really believe that they belong there. And once they believe they belong there, that's when they can put in these performances that they are. And they deserve to be fifth at the moment.
Yeah, given that mindset, do you think they'll cause Liverpool problems?
Yeah, I do, yeah. Well, they certainly did at Bramall Lane, didn't they? I mean, I would argue that on Liverpool's incredible win run when they're sort of basically sweeping all before them. That was arguably their biggest test, if you like, and they really pushed it to the limit. And they've got that within their locker, really. Every time you think, well, the Sheffield United wheels will come off and basically this has to even out and the story ends somewhere, they come back and surprise you with a big statement result. I think they'll cause Liverpool problems. I just think that Liverpool right now are in this incredible groove where they do look to be virtually unstoppable. They're getting result after result after result. But make no mistake about it, Sheffield United can go away from home, and they're particularly dangerous away from home just with the team and the way it's set up to cause teams problems.
Yeah. You're working in Sweden, David, at the club that was galvanised by Graham Potter. Mm. They gave him Brighton gave him a big contract when there was a lot of talk about Everton being interested in him. How big a year is this for Graham Potter and Brighton?
I mean, to be honest with you, I'm quite surprised how quickly he's implemented all his ideas and his philosophy, because, you know, sometimes when there's a big change from the way they played under Chris Hughton to the football they're producing now, that could take time. But he's gone in there, he's had immediate effect. And the strange thing is their recruitment over the past couple of seasons has probably suited a Graham Potter side than a Chris Hughton. You often felt that when new players came in, they always tend to go back to the old guard and to the players who had got them success, who got them up and got them to stay in the Premier League in the first season up there. But I think that's definitely a long term plan. They've got Dan Ashworth in there, who's the main driving force behind the success that Gareth Southgate had with England. He saw that Graham Potter had exactly the same philosophy that he was implementing with England side, and they've got the money to be able to develop that as well. So it'll be really interesting to see how they recruit in January and next summer. They've always got a great recruitment department there. They've in depth with their data analysis to shortlist a lot of candidates. But I think that a big part of what he's trying to do there and playing football, a lot of that hinges on Adam Webster as well at the back. They miss him when he's not there. He's injured for a couple of weeks not so long ago. And I think he's got a big future, and he probably will be including the England squad in the near future, I would imagine.
Yeah. And you know, I know you're sweet on the other centre back, aren't you?
Oh, Lewis Dunk, yeah. It's funny, I did do a piece with Adam Webster earlier in the season, and he speaks really well. He's got such a big future. And a couple of times he referred to Lewis Dunk as our best player. He kind of, you know, he really looks up to Lewis Dunk, and he's clearly learning from him. I just think Lewis Dunk is absolutely phenomenal. I think he's big, powerful, strong, good on the ball, commanding. Every time I sort of tweet my affection, respect and love, call it what you will for him, then basically people come back and say, oh, look at, you know, such and such as video clip doing the rounds of him being, you know, done in training, or he didn't do that well when he was previously sort of called up. What I would add, just for a bit of balance, is that he was going through a very, very difficult time for Brighton at that time. He was the one, I think, that kind of kept Brighton together. They stayed up. He's gone from strength to strength this season. Just have a look at him now. I'm so surprised that he hasn't had another chance this season. Surely Gareth Southgate will take another look in 2020. He certainly deserves to Lewis Dunk. And then that, I think that will actually be quite important for Adam Webster and his path. I think centre-half is the one aspect which slightly worries me a bit for England. We need a really solid partnership, and I think Dunk's a real big contender.
Yeah, they did well to hang on to him in the summer. Mm. I think there's a lot of interest in for Lewis Dunk. But I think also with him, it's great for Graham Potter coming in as well, because for his prospects, you know, if he's got ambitions of being away from Brighton as well, because he's only going to develop him more and give him the confidence to say, well, you know, you might have been restricted in what you did before distribution-wise. Now you've got the freedom to not make mistakes, but to play more and to be more expansive. And he looks like he's embracing that.
Yeah, they're playing Chelsea New Year's Day. How important was that win over Spurs for Chelsea, you know, just before Christmas?
I think it's probably more important for Frank Lampard that it was a get him on over Jose Mourinho.
Because he out-coached him, didn't he?
Well, yeah, I mean, he did. And I think there was a lot of frustration from Spurs fans, you know, getting to see what Manchester United fans were mourning about when he was there. And listen, there was a lot of respect for Jose Mourinho, and I think eventually he'll get them back on the right track and back into Champions League places. But I think that from Frank Lampard's perspective, he must be delighted with the way things gone, with the team that he's been putting out there, giving youngsters a chance. And that's it. It's not just about whether they're good enough. It's just about giving them the chance to show that they are good enough. And they're getting that. And the likes of Mason Mount and Tammy Abraham, they're just flourishing under it.
Mm. We've got the year starting for Spurs against Southampton.
Mm.
Can Southampton stay up with that defence?
That would be the issue. I think that Southampton will probably back Hasenhüttl in the January market. And every time you think, oh, Southampton really going to be in trouble this year, they'll come back and surprise you with a result, frankly, whether that be, you know, against an Aston Villa or turning round, you know, sort of, I think they were going to lose really to Watford, weren't they? And all of a sudden they've turned that round on its head. They have got, I think, thanks to Hasenhüttl, I think he's a really good manager, but frankly, the squad isn't in great shape. It does need surgery, I think, probably both in January and indeed the summer. But I do think Southampton will stay up, yeah. I like the way that Southampton go about their business. They've made some recent bad managerial appointments and choices. And I also think the recruitment has been a bit near misses, frankly. They could have, they were close to getting that player, they're close to getting that player, whether it's being Madison or whoever it might be. And, you know, various sort of issues really where it just was very close and they would have been significantly stronger. But I just think that, that Southampton do try and be a bit creative. They just kind of, I mean, the training ground is sensational. The home support is really, really positive and strong, despite some of their home results really being very, very poor, being better away from home. And I just think that Southampton will get out, I think, and there'll be three worst teams off. And I think a lot of that is down to Hasenhüttl. I think he's a very good manager. He's very, very calm. You know, he doesn't look particularly stressed. And I think that's so positive for a set of players who've suffered some really bad defeats in 2019. That's positive.
With Norwich, is a home game against Crystal Palace the sort of game they need to win to stay up?
Yes, certainly. And I think that it's okay, you know, when the big size, like, you know, when Man City rolled up and they beat them at Carrow Road, that's okay. But I mean, if you get 3 points around from teams that are in that bottom half of the table, it has a much more effect, a bigger effect on your position and on theirs, obviously. It's great to see that even when they're not, even if they're not winning games, you know, they're in there, you know, they're still creating a lot of chances. It's good to see Timo Pukki that's still not, even though he fractured a bone in his foot, that he's still able to play. That's really important for them as well. And they've got some good young players there who are coming through, and for their first season, their Premier League, you know, they're swimming, they're not sinking either.
Yeah, yeah. Of those, if they do go down, the players who will probably be picked up by other Premier League clubs, we're looking at both fullbacks, probably Aarons and Lewis. Buendia has always struck me as a really intelligent footballer. Cantwell scoring important goals. Do they sell them or do they keep what they've got and then try and get straight back up again?
Well, Ben Godfrey is another.
Yes,
that I immediately sort of draw to. There's definitely a player there, I think, and in a more confident, or perhaps more balanced team, I think he would even look even better. I think it's going to be difficult to hold on to Pukki, isn't it? I think that basically the one thing that Pukki, I mean, everyone talks about it, but when you see him on the flesh, because sometimes he's one of these things where you don't pick up on the TV coverage, is the movement is brilliant. Honestly, for movement purposes, which obviously you're always going to be focusing on the ball in the sort of the coverage, but if you see him in the flesh and the ground, oh, it's sensational. He really is top level. So I think that's going to be an issue. I do think that other clubs will come and have a look, you know, sort of whether that's Aarons, who does look at, you know, does look...
Tottenham are really interested in him, aren't they?
I can understand why, but for various reasons, because obviously Aurier is just not up to the level that Spurs require. And then basically Max Aarons is outstanding, fits the bill, young English, and lots of potential there. And I do think he would probably be gettable. I just think with Norwich, I think they'll go down. I think it's a really well-run club. And I think the challenge, rather like with Burnley, when Burnley first came up and then went down, the art of what Sean Dyche did there was that he used the experience to strengthen the players that remained, didn't let a mass exodus happen. And basically the club was in a good setup because they hadn't broken the bank, they hadn't bankrupted themselves, rather like Norwich now, and were able to go again. I think that the issue for me is Norwich can't have a fire sale in that basically they must, if they lose, you know, players, hopefully it'll only be two, because I'm convinced that they'll have gained enough from this experience to come back straight away and come back stronger and then perhaps stay, rather like Burnley have, you know, for 4 or 5 years. But I do think the structure there is nice and some of those young players are terrific.
Yeah. What do you think about Aston Villa, Dave? They're conceding consistently, which is strange when you think you've got someone like John Terry on the coaching staff. Yeah. Are they in banging trouble?
Yeah, they are. I mean, it's, you know, we can go on about, you know, saying that it's strikers that, you know, that win you the games and win you the points to stay up. But if you're conceding the goals they are, it doesn't just have the effect of losing points. It gets demoralising. And I think that, especially from, you know, look, from the keeper's point of view, from Tom Heaton, you know, that he's, he's not as well protected as he was at Burnley, and he's not been able to give those same opportunities to keep his side in the game. And again, from him, it could have a massive effect on him, especially coming, you know, next year coming up to the Euros as well. He wants to be in the squad, so it's important for him that they try and turn things around. But you're right, it's strange how we look at these sides, the teams who have defensive problems. Arsenal notoriously, and they had Steve Bould, who was part of one of the most well-drilled defences the game's ever seen. And you just wonder how much time they do spend on that, because it is an art. It is something that if you do spend time on it in training, you will get better at it. And I think that it's one part of the game now where we're always looking forward all the time. But if you're conceding goals at the back, you're going to have to score two or three goals to win games in the Premier League for a side like Aston Villa. That's a difficult thing to do.
Yeah. If we're looking at clubs who might be sleepwalking into trouble, John, what about Bournemouth?
Yeah, I do. Bournemouth are quite unpredictable in that I went down there recently and saw them play Liverpool, and I was really surprised actually that basically there wasn't enough fight there. And yes, they had injuries. I mean, Ake and then sort of, you know, Callum Wilson both came off with hamstrings. They're in the midst of a terrible, you know, injury crisis. And then I think the following week they're going with Chelsea. So I'd like to think that they will stay up, because I really admire the job there that Eddie Howe has done. And I think when we always, you know, predict our season, who will go up and who will stay, you know, stay up, and we never ever think of Bournemouth as relegation candidates. And frankly, I still don't. But I do think what interests me is that I think that Eddie Howe has done an amazing job at Bournemouth. But do Bournemouth need a new manager, and does Eddie Howe need a new challenge? I do think in 2020, I'd love to see, you know, maybe with all due respect to Bournemouth, a bigger club give Eddie Howe that opportunity, because he certainly deserved it. And maybe, just maybe, I'm not suggesting these sort of kind of times run out, because Eddie Howe, I think, you know, they build statues and call him the greatest manager they've ever had. And make no mistake about that. Sometimes a new direction, a new thing can work. And I just think that some of the recruitment hasn't always been great. Some of the signings haven't been, you know, inspirational. And I just think we might have reached a point in time where I don't think Bournemouth will go down. But I do think, I wonder whether the manager and indeed the club just needs a new challenge to drive them again, to push them to the next level.
You often find in football that managers who stay in there for an extended period, like Eddie has, sometimes you can start taking for granted that the players that have been there for a long time, that they know everything that you've instilled in them. But sometimes they need reminders all the time. And I think that, especially with Bournemouth and Southampton, in the past, when Hasan Hüttl came in, they were very aggressive. That was the first thing indeed. They were very aggressive. They had a high-pressing game. And they've just lost that a little bit. And it's the same with Bournemouth a little bit. That's where they get their great performance and results. That's where they're getting from, by being a front foot side. Whereas sometimes, as the games go by, you get sort of, you get moulded by the opposition instead of in reacting to them rather than impressing your game onto them. And I think that certainly Bournemouth and Southampton are two sides where they need to get back to that.
Yeah. Let's finish by looking forward, since we're talking about the New Year's Day fixtures. Who has been your breakthrough player of this season?
Tammy Abraham. I just think he's been absolutely phenomenal. I do think that there's always been this issue, and he highlights a really good story at Chelsea, whether English players get enough chance. I think there's no doubt about it in my mind that it's always the most difficult position, I think, to make the most impact is as a striker, because you're immediately judged on goals. You can't have 2 or 3 weeks off. You just can't. You need to be scoring every week. Tammy Abraham, I think, has done that. I looked at him at the start of the season, even whether it be at Man United opening day, and I thought, he's going to be a bit raw. I'm not sure about him. Has he got the stature? Has he got the physicality to make an impact and carry and lead that line for Chelsea? He absolutely has. He's also a great advert that if you give young players an opportunity and a platform, then they can really take it. And I love the way that Abraham has improved, I think, not just as a goal scorer, as a finisher, but his all-round play, his link-up play, terrific player. I think he's had a brilliant 2019. I think he'll get even better in 2020, and that's why he's my breakthrough.
Dave?
We've already spoke about him earlier. It's going to be Dean Henderson for me. I think the fact that, you know, he's made a couple of high-profile mistakes this season. He's had a roasting from his manager publicly, and it hasn't affected him one bit. And knowing his character, he's, like I said before, he's driven, he's ambitious, and watched him quite a lot for the under-21s, training at St. George's Park, and he taught the coaches there, and the word they use about him is animal. So in training, he's just, he gives everything in training. He takes a real pride in not conceding goals, keeping the ball at the net, and I think that the fact that this, you know, we have got a wealth of good goalkeepers at the moment, got a lot of depth in that department, but I'd still see that, and hopefully this coming year that he'll get a cap for the full side, because his performances playing in that side, you know, more than deserve it, I think.
Mm. Well, I'll go back to where we began, Manchester United. Mason Greenwood is a special talent, and he's one of their own, you know. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.